What's up, everybody? I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, John, from Zapright. He started this journey a few years ago. I got introduced to Zapright. He's recently brought on Parker Lewis and Will Cole, so some of the big names in the space from Unchained. He's developing this company left and right, so hear about what he thinks about the gradually, then suddenly movement and everything that is going on in Zapright in the Bitcoin space. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, it's not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast should not be taken as financial advice. Big shout out to two of my sponsors. I'm rocking it. You can't see me because you're just listening to me, but I'm rocking the best Bitcoin jerseys in the game. Hodlers Official. That's HODLERS official.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle and get yourself one of them Satoshi packs, the Genesis Satoshi packs. They got the black or the white jerseys with the 09 on the back. We're smoking that Satoshi Genesis pack over here. So go ahead and get yourself a jersey. Promo code GreenCandle, 10% off. Also, woo! We got a lot of energy in the building right now, and that is in part to Sovereign Energy. That's SVRNEnergy.com. You can go and buy yourself some of the best energy drinks that I've had in quite some time. I'm not, honestly, not a big energy drink guy, but I drink Sovereign almost like every day now at this point. It's kind of bad, but also kind of good because it keeps me all jacked up. I keep clear. I keep the clear eyes. I keep focused. I keep the mental clarity. And if you use promo code GreenCandle, you get 10% off. And underneath every single pack, there are sats. You can get at a minimum 500 sats up to a million. So go to sovereignenergy.com, use promo code GreenCandle, you'll get 10% off and you get sats back. I'm helping you out, saving you money and keeping you energized. And swag the fuck out with some of these Hodlers Official jerseys. So use promo code GreenCandle, 10% off on both sites. All right, enough from me. Let's hear from John from Zapright. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of this State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got a very special guest, John of Zapright, who just brought on Parker Lewis and Will Cole. And so, you know, I kind of talked about it with them a couple weeks ago when I was back at Pleb Lab for Startup Day about the overall disruption of the Bitcoin network when it comes to the payment system, creators, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, obviously Parker's known for the gradually, then suddenly with Bitcoin adoption. So I'll start it right off the bat with you, John. Where do you think we're at with Bitcoin adoption?
All right. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for having me on. It's awesome to be on the show. I watched that episode when you had Parker and Will on. I think that was after the startup day, right? When they came in and kind of had a little chat. So that was really great. Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin adoption, like, where do we start on that? We're at this point where, you know, I think we've known Bitcoin has been a store of value for quite some time. Everybody knows that. It's, you know, its number go up. It's what brings people in, you know, to Bitcoin at the start, at least most people. But I think personally, you know, I've had this view for quite a while that we actually need to get people using it and spending it. I know there's some people will say that, like, you know, holding Bitcoin is using Bitcoin. I agree. It is. It's just not using it fully, completely. It's one use case for it. The other use case is obviously spending. And I think that will just get more and more important as time goes on, especially, you know, what we've seen with the you know, the bank failures and choke points and stuff that have happened recently and will continue to happen. And so I think the state of is a medium of exchange. And, you know, that's what we're here to do with Zapright.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys are definitely pushing that forward. So, you know, as far as, like, I guess the use case of, you know, people kind of spending it, you know, obviously you guys are making it a lot easier with Zapright. But where do you think, I guess, like, the, you know, the gap that you're filling with Zapright? And, like, where do you think, I guess, the next step is for people to kind of get a little bit more comfortable? Because it seems like, you know, I guess there's a big HODL mentality, at least here in the United States, where everybody's, you know, kind of using it as a store for value, maybe a savings account, that kind of thing. But obviously, like you said, the next step is, you know, more of a medium exchange. So where do you think, I guess, we're kind of, I guess, lacking, whether it's maybe just a mindset shift, some sort of technology? Like, where do you think, I guess, we can kind of help to fix and move a step forward in the Bitcoin adoption curve?
Yeah, yeah, big question. Lots of answers to that. I think one of the we need to have that shift in mindset from Bitcoiners who are holding right now, using it as savings. We need to start to get more of those people to actually start spending Bitcoin, whether it's spend and replace or just spending what you've saved up in the past. So mindset is definitely a huge part of it. The other part of it as well, we need to get more merchants on board. Because that's going to be a huge driver of it, right? Because even if we have Bitcoiners who want to spend their Bitcoin, that can't happen unless we've got merchants who are willing to accept it. And so it really starts with merchants being wanting to accept Bitcoin. And of course, that's obviously where Zaprite started, and what we're all about is trying to solve that payment inflow part of it. I guess another part of it is the technology side of it as well. And we can expand on any of these points, but kind of briefly, just to explain where Zaprite fits in on that, is you can be self-sovereign and run tools like BTC Pay Server, which are, you know, it's an amazing tool. And, you know, I wish it's just a little bit more technical debt for most people. And so, you know, a lot of people are just going to rely on something a little bit easier. And on the other end of the scale, then you've got, you know, OpenNode, BitPay, things like that, which are, you know, custodial, KYC, stuff like that. Again, like, you know, good tools for the use cases, but obviously I think there's a sweet spot in the middle where Zaprite can fill that need, where we can actually have people be self-sovereign in terms of they can still control the money, can still control their keys, but they don't have to run the server, they don't have to run the infrastructure. And so if we can provide really easy software to people to just plug in XPubs, hook up LND nodes, whatever it might be, Core Lightning nodes, or even third-party custodial services like Strike, if they want to use something like Strike or Ibex to manage liquidity for them, or Voltage, they can do that. But at least they have those options. So if we can provide those tools on the technology side of it to make it much easier for people, then we solve that aspect. And then just expanding on that a little bit, if we can solve, the accounting and reporting side of it as well, which is pretty huge, which is always a barrier for a lot of people to accepting Bitcoin, is the fact that they have all these, separate calculations and separate accounting and stuff. So it's a multi-pronged approach, but I think convincing merchants to accept Bitcoin, giving them the tools they need to make that as easy as possible, and then convincing Bitcoiners on the other side to actually start spending. I think if we can start solving a lot of those, even if it's just one at a time, then, you know, we'll be on the right path.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with you 100%. And it seems like, you know, you're obviously coming here from Austin, right? I mean, I met Parker and Will in Austin. You're hanging out in Pleb Lab. And, you know, it seems like kind of, I guess, the Bitcoin Mecca is what I like to call it, right? There's a lot of Bitcoiners there. You got Pleb Lab, Bitcoin Commons. You know, Marty's obviously down there, and there's a lot of, you know, Bitcoiners in general that are living in Austin or in the Austin area. So I'm sure that a lot of merchants have exposure to Bitcoin, or at least like heard of it. But what has that conversation kind of been like when you've been trying to onboard merchants, tell them about Zaprite and the product, and, you know, what you guys can help with about, you know, accepting Bitcoin as like a medium of exchange? Have you, you know, I guess, seen a little bit of a shift in a positive direction as of late to try to get more merchants or I guess to onboard more merchants and to accept Bitcoin?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely a shift in a more positive direction on that side, for sure. I mean, one of the things I spoke about recently with Marty, actually, when you mentioned Marty, he tweeted about his healthcare provider in Austin who had started accepting Bitcoin. And we had a conversation with Veronica, and we had explained, you know, the benefits of using Zaprite and obviously some of the benefits of Bitcoin itself and holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet and accepting it. She had already had help from, you know, John, some other local Bitcoiners here who had, you know, started orange pilling her on that front. So she got it. She got that side of it, and she was just looking for the right tool to be able to manage those payments coming into her practice. And so we had a call with her, and it turns out that, you know, Zaprite fitted her needs perfectly well. And so she already had that that mindset of why she wanted to accept Bitcoin. And so when she found the tool, she just said, all right, this is perfect. This is a natural fit. And so she kind of made the announcement and put a web page up about, you know, the importance of accepting Bitcoin. And so we're finding more and more people who are, you know, open to that idea of, you know, they want Bitcoin on the balance sheet, or at least they want to be able to accept it because they see the benefits of it, not just, you know, not just avoiding credit card processing fees and all that type of stuff, but just the ability to directly accept payments from somebody who values Bitcoin as, you know, the best money. They want to hold that, they want to spend that. And, you know, the medical industry is very much aligned with that. Like if you've got a medical professional who has that same mindset of like, well, look, your medical decisions are, you know, very, very personal thing for you. We want to give you the best information you possibly can to make those decisions, but ultimately those decisions are yours and you will choose what's best for you. And Bitcoin, you know, follows that same, you know, that same path where we really want to give people the opportunity to use the best possible money there is. And we know that is Bitcoin. And so when you have merchants that line up with that same ethos and that same philosophy, then it's very easy for them to realize that they need and want to accept Bitcoin. And so we just need to offer them the tools to do that. And we're finding more and more that, you know, as we build out features on Zaprite, we're just meeting all of those needs for those merchants. And it's a very easy thing for them to be able to like just quickly sign up, play with the app, realize, yep, this is perfect. It does exactly what we need. And they're good to go very quickly.
Well, yeah, that's great. And I think, you know, that's going to be kind of more the wave, and it's going to be easier and easier of a sell for you guys as Zaprite grows and as Bitcoin develops like over these years. And especially, you know, maybe with the halving as the number go up next year, right? More people would probably be willing to accept Bitcoin as it gets more in the news. But I want to know the biggest worry of merchants. Like, do you have one that like kind of stands out? Because I can think of a couple off the top of my head, but I want to hear your answer first before I go on my little ramble.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer as to the biggest one, but there are certainly ones that pop up all the time, which is, you know, the volatility one. It doesn't come up that often, surprisingly, because, you know, the people who want to accept Bitcoin, they're familiar with Bitcoin already. You know, either someone has orange pilled them, or they've read something, or they kind of know what it is. Like the example I gave before, they know the power of Bitcoin and what it actually stands for. And they also realize that, like, you know, not everybody is going to pay in Bitcoin from day one. So it's not as if they're shifting, you know, all of their 100% of their income into Bitcoin from day one. And so they're happy to use tools like Zaprite, which gives them this like one overall unified checkout where they can charge in Bitcoin or fiat and give the payer the option. And so it starts off with one or two people paying, and then obviously multiplies to more and more. And so over time, you know, the Bitcoin coming in onto their balance sheet will increase. But at the beginning, it's a smaller percentage of their users. And so they're okay to deal with that volatility because they're, you know, this is a small percentage of my income, so I can leave it sitting in Bitcoin and I can deal with that volatility. So that doesn't come up as often. A lot of the questions and the you know, sales questions that we get are, well, how does this fit in with my accountant? Can my accountant work with this? Like what happens on that side of things? And that's where we're just building tools to make that easier as well. I mean, right now we've got a fully populated CSV file, which just gives you everything you could possibly need for your accountant to be able to work with those figures and those incomes and see exactly, you know, where they came from, who they came from, what the cost basis was, the dates, everything, all that kind of stuff. So we already have that, which you know, at the moment, it solves the need for like the vast majority of Zaprite users. They're like, yeah, look, just the CSV, once it has all the details, I can give that to my accountant, we're good to go. But over time, obviously, there's improvements we can make there. Like we can have direct connections into QuickBooks, into Sage, you know, Xero, NetSuite, all these type of things, which just makes it even easier. We can tailor those CSVs and those connections, work with the APIs to actually get that information directly in there. So we can actually make people more comfortable with signing up for a service like Zaprite, where there really isn't that much of a disruption at all to their accounting flow. It's just you're just using different forms of payment, And so once we give them all the information to account for those, then, you know, that solves that problem too. So they're kind of two of the main ones that come up more so on the
Yeah, and that's great, you know, because that was going to be my number one worry was obviously the accounting aspect of it, but obviously you guys got that solved. But the other worry I have is the taxation aspect of it. Do you get any questions about that for, you know, people like, you know, they kind of have that worry, whether it's capital gains or if I get paid in Bitcoin, like how is that going to affect, you know, taxes come end of the year when the IRS and the tax man comes knocking on the door?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we get some questions like that, but not a huge amount because I think most people, you know, especially if they're pre-exposed to Bitcoin, they kind of understand the capital gains aspect of it. So that's not really something that comes up too often. We do get questions about, you know, how you deal with it maybe as a freelancer, like if you're accepting Bitcoin. The simple answer is there, you don't really have to do anything at all, because you just report your taxes as normal. If you're sending out an invoice through Zapride for, say, $1,000, and you're getting paid in Bitcoin, at the end of the year when you're doing your taxes, you just have to report that you got $1,000 worth of income and you pay your taxes on that. What that now means is if you got paid in Bitcoin, you now have $1,000, or you have a specific amount of Bitcoin that has $1,000 cost basis. And then it becomes, you know, when you want to spend that in the future, then you have to calculate, okay, well, was there a gain on that? And what are the tax implications of that? That's a fairly straightforward thing that, you know, most people who have been, you know, buying Bitcoin are probably well aware of. When it comes to the business side of it, or the enterprise side, where you're dealing more with kind of balance sheets and treasury and stuff like that, it does get a little bit more complicated, but not massively so, particularly with some of the new rules that came in, where you can now mark up and down the cost of that, the value of that Bitcoin. Whereas previously you could only mark it down, or you had to mark it down when the price dropped, but you couldn't mark it back up. So now, you know, the recommendations that are coming through from the various accountancy boards and stuff is that, look, hey, this really should be more fluid. We should be able to mark it up when the value of it goes up. So when you're doing your quarterly reports or whatever it is, you don't have to have a suppressed value of Bitcoin on your balance sheet that, you know, might scare shareholders or anybody else like looking at your business. And so obviously your balance sheet starts to look more healthy the longer you're on a Bitcoin standard. I think that's really what's going to be appealing to a lot of businesses now, is really to make that balance sheet decision to get more business on their, more Bitcoin on their balance sheet, so that their business starts to look more healthy over time.
Yeah, and that's great too. But, you know, it seems like a lot of the, I guess, more Lightning-based solutions now, or at least maybe the more mainstream ones, are kind of, I guess, like indirectly that, like fiat rails, essentially, right? I mean, like, you know, I think of like Stripe Cash App. They allow you to send money, you know, instantly over the Lightning network. But essentially, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, a fiat transaction, almost like the Venmo or something like that, using, or PayPal using the Lightning Network, which doesn't have the fees. What I think is interesting about Zapride is you guys are kind of diving into Bitcoin as a medium of an exchange. So do you think that that's going to be, I guess, a competitive advantage for you in the long term? Because you guys are just, you know, you see the writing on the wall, essentially, with fiat, where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, all fiat currencies fail. And you're kind of diving into the new hard money standard. So when it comes down to the nitty gritty and, you know, people want to start accepting Bitcoin more often, you know, it seems like people will turn more to Zapride opposed to maybe ones that had, I guess, the fiat kind of infrastructure and then chose to go to Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll definitely play to our advantage in the future, because that's, you know, that's the application that we're building. We're building the software to help migrate businesses onto a Bitcoin standard. And so eventually, you know, that's where most businesses are going to go. And certainly that's the mindset that we have, when like everything that we build in Zapride is geared towards the Bitcoin side of things. How do we make it easier for people to accept Bitcoin and manage that Bitcoin within their businesses? You know, there's obviously going to be some fiat integrations in there with Strike, for example, IBEX, different services that allow you to exchange between USD, euros, whatever it might be, and Bitcoin. But I think over time, as more services start to integrate Bitcoin, like we've seen it with Cash App, as more and more of these services, like, you know, you mentioned Venmo and things like that, we'll see more of those applications integrating Lightning into it. And so now the payments become much more interoperable, right? And whether they decide to settle in USD and kind of build somewhat of a walled garden around their Lightning infrastructure, that remains to be seen. But over time, like, it'll just become unstoppable, where they'll just have to open it up because people will be paying each other, you know, Lightning peer-to-peer. Whether it goes through these KYC apps or not, that's, you know, the user's choice. But we really want to provide people the flexibility to be able to do it in a peer-to-peer manner if that's what they want to do, in a self-custody manner. But at the same time, we're wallet agnostic, so we can really plug in any wallet and just allow people to build these checkout flows, particularly from the business side of things, right? Because that's kind of really where we're focused, is allowing businesses to accept Bitcoin. And so if we can, you know, build these very flexible checkouts that allow people to connect many different plugins from many different providers, from self-custody all the way through to custody, single sig, multi-sig, like Lightning, everything, we then just give people the flexibility to accept these payments in ways that benefits them the most and benefits their customers the most. And so over time, I think people will tend to graduate towards Zaprite for that reason, is that flexibility to, you know, in the interim, offer these Bitcoin payment options alongside the fiat options on, as I mentioned, this one unified checkout. But then over time, as they find more and more customers paying in Bitcoin and using the Lightning rails, they can actually start to, you know, migrate more of their business onto a Bitcoin standard. And that's where somebody like Zaprite can shine, because that's, you know, really the focus of our attention, is building out a lot more of these tools that make that a reality for more businesses.
Yeah, that's great. But you mentioned like self-custody and kind of like the wallet agnostic approach, which I think is awesome. But I have a question, I guess, on along those lines, right? I mean, because it seems like, you know, a major corporation or a big business that you would able, like say a Walmart, for example, they get, you know, millions and millions of transactions a day. And, you know, in probably that, I don't know, probably multi-million dollar range in a month or something like that. Where as, you know, maybe like a freelancer, for example, gets paid once a week or once a month or something like that. Maybe once a day from like various projects that they're doing, and they have deliverables, whatnot. But either way, it's a much smaller, I guess, dollar scale, Bitcoin scale than maybe like a big time merchant. So in my opinion, I think that a big merchant would be a little bit more fearful when it comes to self-custody, opposed to like maybe a freelancer who would really want something like that. Is that kind of a trend that you're noticing as well? Is like kind of the bigger the scale of the company, the more likely that they're, I guess, wanting more of like a custodial solution, opposed to, you know, kind of really just taking that ownership and, you know, going through self-custody?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's, you know, there's going to be a range of customers and users of Zaprite with varying needs and, you know, comfort zones as to what it is they want to do. In terms of the need side of it, there's going to be different payment sizes, obviously, right? If you're a freelancer and you're taking in a couple of $100, you might be able to do that over Lightning. Maybe you want to spin up your own L&D and connect that for complete self-sovereignty, or maybe you're happy to use like Strike or Ibex or something like that. And we'll derive addresses, and that can go straight into your wallet as well. So you've got everything from that side all the way up to maybe a large enterprise, as you mentioned. Maybe they don't want to deal with the custody side of it, because either one, they just don't want to have that responsibility, or two, it's just larger amounts, and they would rather have that in a more secure location. And so that's why we, you know, integrate with folks like Unchained, right? Where businesses can go to Unchained and set up these secure multi-sig vaults, and then they can connect those directly to Zaprite. So now all of these payments can just go directly into the Unchained vault. So if you're a business, a large organization, and, you know, let's say you're a multi-partner legal firm, and you're taking in like hundreds of thousands of dollars per month or millions of dollars per month, you're probably not going to want them coming into like, you know, a self-custody wallet on your desktop or your phone or something, right? You're going to want them going into the likes of Unchained, where they can stay secured under a multi-sig. And so we really have a range of those options to kind of suit every need. Some of the larger firms with the larger, more regular, larger payments on chain would go more towards a custody option for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I think obviously, yeah, the bigger the scale, the more companies on a Bitcoin standard, I think the less likely that they would, you know, have to, or, you know, the less likely they would want the, I guess, full on like self-custody kind of route. Maybe they would want to partner with something like Unchained. But yeah, I mean, that's another rabbit hole that we could go down at another time. But I kind of want to go into a little bit about, like, I guess, you know, being a startup in the overall kind of shaky, hairy macro environment. So obviously, you know, I think I got exposed to Zaprite, I want to say, at Startup Day last year. So even before, I had maybe your colleague on, I believe on Startup Day in 2022 at some point in time. And so I've heard of you guys. I know I've seen the Zaprite flag in Pleb Lab for quite some time. But obviously it's been kind of like, it's been a bear market in Bitcoin. And it's, you know, a very shaky global macroeconomic environment. So what has that been like just being, you know, kind of a startup, in that environment? Have you noticed, you know, I guess more positive things like kind of ahead? Obviously, I mean, you guys are growing pretty well. You know, obviously, like, you know, maybe finding some funding, that those kind of things, there's various roadblocks with startups. So how has that experience been kind of, I guess, building in the bear market?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, first answer is it's been amazing. I love it. I'm just like eternally optimistic. I just think it's a really great time to get some work done in a bear market. But you know, to expand on that a little bit, yeah, we, you know, I moved down from Canada in, you know, 2021, late 2021, and was the first, you know, business, so to speak, through the doors of Pleb Lab. It had just started at that time. So they set up the hackerspace in Austin, and Zaprite was kind of the first one in there. So yeah, we still got the flag hanging on the wall. You've been here a couple of times. And I think you did chat with Nate, who is, you know, an advisor for us and has, you know, worked with us like from the very start. Yeah, I mean, we raised a bit of money in early 2022. And, you know, the bear market quickly hit in the middle of 2022. And so, you know, I kind of had a decision to make, like, do I keep trying to raise money, or do I kind of look at what I got and be grateful and start building? And that's what I did. I kind of said, all right, well, like, look, I have enough here to hire a developer and start, you know, doing some serious work. And so really we kind of just put our head down, and between the two of us, between my kind of design background and this full stack senior engineer, like, we were able to just get a lot done in the bear market. We completely rewrote the code base from the ground up, and really started from scratch to get ourselves set up in, you know, for what we knew would be, like, you know, we needed more of a solid base to actually scale Zaprite and move the application onto another level. The code I had written at the start just wasn't gonna cut it. So yeah, we really took the opportunity to kind of just, like, you know, get heads down and build. And I knew that we were in for tough times. Like, I could see that from last year. And so I kind of just made the decision to be extremely frugal with the money. Not splash around the investment money that I got, but really try and put that to the best use that I possibly could. And so we managed to, you know, stay alive and very healthy. We've got, like, plenty of runway left. We're not in any danger at all. Which is amazing, but it's also kind of, you know, sad to see a lot of the companies that we've been surrounded by, both here in Austin and other places, having to, you know, scale back and lay off staff and do things like that. But also that's kind of an opportunity for us where we can, like, pick up some contractors and stuff and start to work, you know, a little bit faster as we come to the kind of, you know, trough in this bear market and we start to, like, you know, turn the corner. We can actually start to, like, pick up some of those staff and start to work a little bit quicker. And so that's what we've been able to do with the money that we still have left over and the runway that we still have. So it's been an opportunity for us because of, you know, I was very, very careful with the money that I raised in 2022. It was just a small amount, a few hundred thousand dollars, you know, a lot of money, but a small amount in terms of raising money for a round. But it meant a hell of a lot to me, and it enabled. just like I said, just really exciting time to be around a lot of these top quality developers and a lot of these people that pass through PlebLab here in Austin. It's a truly exciting place. What Car is doing here and has done, and folks like Kyle and stuff before him, and Car and Keon are doing, is it's amazing. It's like, it's just really, really, truly an amazing experience to be here surrounded by a lot of these phenomenal Bitcoiners and developers that are really kind of pushing the boundaries of what's possible. I mean, we're seeing a lot of that with Super Testnet now. A lot of the stuff that that he's doing is really getting a lot of people talking, and that's great. So to be surrounded by that every day is amazing. And as you know, Austin is, you know, one of, if probably not the center of Bitcoin in the US, at least. I know there's some people who will argue that and throw around a few other cities, but you know, no doubt there's just amazing things happening here. So it's been great to be part of it. The bear market, while, you know, we all want the price to be higher, we all want more users and more people kind of, you know, gravitating towards Bitcoin, we just kind of have to be realistic that, you know, at least for the time being, Bitcoin seems to be moving in cycles, and we have to respect that, and we have to manage our budgets and our runways accordingly. And so we've been able to do that. And, you know, we're in a really, really great position now, especially with Parker and Will coming on board to be able to take Zaprite to the next level. So super excited about, you know, everything that's happened in the last year, not just for Zaprite, but the amount of companies that I see, folks working super hard out of PlebLab here and Bitcoin Commons every day. You know, I'm super excited about what's going to happen in the next kind of 12 to 24 months. I think we're going to see an explosion of applications coming out that are just going to make Bitcoin, you know, a hell of a lot more user-friendly and more mainstream. And that's great to see. But, you know, that's the old cliche, bear markets are for building. So I've certainly been witness to that, and it's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you did, you know, obviously, if you have like a lot of runway left, you were very, I guess, smart with the way you used the money that you were able to raise, which is awesome. But, you know, it seems like a lot of, I guess, maybe not first-time founders, but a lot of the Bitcoin kind of CEO founders that maybe raised a little bit before or like in 2020 and then saw that run up, got kind of, I guess, I don't know if I want to say just like kind of threw their money around, like not necessarily, I'm not trying to, you know, I guess throw anybody under the bus or rip anybody, but it seems like they took a little bit more risk. They were a little bit more leveraged. We saw, you know, a few companies, very big companies fail because of that. Do you think it was kind of an advantage that, you know, you raised money in a time where it was kind of a little bit more of a dilapidated price? We had already hit the all-time high and we've come down a little bit. And like, you know, because you raised at the time that you did, you're able to stay like a little bit more level headed and just say, okay, you know, I understand Bitcoin goes through these waves. So I have to, you know, stay a little bit more flat and level headed in order to avoid, you know, the volatility of not only being an entrepreneur, but the volatility of Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think definitely it helped for sure. I mean, I could have looked at it as a negative. You know, like I said, market hit and, you know, investors kind of scurried and everybody kind of got a bit worried. And I could have looked at that and thought, you know, oh damn, this is not going to work out. You know, I didn't get all the money I wanted. Like, you know, woe is me. Like this is not great. But at the same time, to your point, I kind of looked at it and thought, okay, I have enough to keep going and do a hell of a lot. I know I can manage this amount that I've got in, but also with the bear market hitting so fast, right? Everybody thought we were going to keep going to like, you know, 200-300 and we just kind of reversed very quickly and dropped. And so I guess that was a very, very, you know, very clear wake up call that, okay, like this could last for a long time. And so I better look after the money that I've got in. Whereas it could have been a very different story if I had a raise like 6 or 9 months beforehand and I filled out the whole round and I thought, okay, great. I've got another like, you know, 18 months of bull run. So like, let's just continue to go and start splashing money around. So I think definitely having the bear market, things are not going to be as rosy as, you know, some people might say, at least not for as long as they thought it would be. And yeah, we saw a bunch of companies, lately having to like, as I mentioned, like lay off some folks and, cut their teams down a little bit, which is, it's always unfortunate to see that. These are all great Bitcoin companies trying to build things. And so you never really want to see that happen. But in the startup world, this is more from the VC side, but like, traditional Silicon Valley VCs, like the mentality there really always is, if you raise a first round or something, like you gotta literally just start expanding the team like crazy. Make it look like you're going places, like just increase your headcount and just expand and make yourself look bigger, right? Puff your chest out. And then you can raise another round and you can go. And I don't know if that's what a lot of Bitcoiners, like founders, fell into that same trap as well. I mean, maybe they raised some money when the times were good and started like increasing their headcount too quickly. We are in that position now where they have to kind of peel back a little bit, whereas we didn't take that approach. I could have hired three developers and said like, oh yeah, this is perfect, I can pay three developers for a year, like let's go. But I didn't, because I just knew that times were going to get tough further on. And so I think definitely I guess that's a long-winded way of saying like, yes, raising money and having a bear market hit halfway through that is, it definitely kind of shakes you up and makes you realize a few things very quickly.
Yeah, and that's a great point. But, I think it's interesting because I guess from like that you brought up like Silicon Valley and like the kind of the tech boom and kind of how people were just almost like over, like putting on a bunch of fat in order to, essentially make themselves look like they're going places. And it seems like, that's a very, I guess, like risky kind of like boom or bust approach, which a lot of people outside of Bitcoin kind of look at Bitcoin as like a, a boom or a risky kind of investment or, and it seems like a lot of, I guess, newer Bitcoin founders that I've seen are more like risk averse. Do you think that that's kind of, I guess, maybe along the lines of, I don't know, what do you kind of equate that to? Is it like the hard money principles? Is it, maybe they're like kind of have the same mindset as like gold bugs. And so they don't see Bitcoin as necessarily like a risky investment, even though the volatility goes every which way every day. Like, why do you kind of think that that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a Bitcoiner attitude of, it is this whole low time preference thing, right? As you become a Bitcoiner and you go deeper down that rabbit hole, you do like, cause the world seems to be falling apart. Every time we turn on the news, there's some crazy stuff that's, designed to make us like scared and, hunker down in our homes and not do anything. But the reality is like, there's an amazing bright future ahead of us and we just have to strive towards that. And when you're a Bitcoiner, you realize that. And so you start to make these life decisions that help you on that path. So whether it's looking after your health or your family and relationships and things like that, your education, you just want to become a better person for this bright future that you see happening. You know it's going to be a longer path ahead. Of trying to make things happen immediately and successes happen immediately, you're more about like building the solid foundation for those successes to inevitably happen in the future. And so I think as Bitcoiners, when you're running a company, when you become a founder of a Bitcoin company, you have to take that same mentality around your company as well. You cannot look at it any differently. You have to realize that we are building for a world that is not in place yet. And we don't know when that's going to be in place. We obviously want it to be sooner rather than later, but we have to recognize that, there's going to be a lot of disruption between now and then. Things are not going to move as fast as we would like them to move. Even if they did, are we really ready? Do we have the applications? Do we have the software? Do we have the tools ready for people? If all the banks start failing again and people are shut off from the banking system, do we really have the tools ready for them to be able to like accept payments and make payments? I would argue no, not yet. This is why we need to build more applications, consumer facing applications on top of Bitcoin. And obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff that needs to happen on the protocol level. But you really have to take that mindset of you need to protect your Bitcoin business for the long run. You cannot, as you say, like put on a lot of fat and pretend that you're doing well, hoping that things are going to work out. You really just have to you know, take the same approach you do to your own life, to be, no, we need to kind of like take a step back, build the foundations for a longer future, and work from there. And your business is no different. You really have to take that same approach.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. But I also, you know, you made a point about, you know, are we ready for something of like getting on a full Bitcoin standard? And you said you don't think we're there yet. I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, we're still some years away. So I'm going to put you on a spot here. How long until you think we're going to be able to be ready to be on like a full Bitcoin standard? Because, you know, it seems like, I don't know, if you turn on the news, you open up Twitter, you go on somewhere, like, you know, it seems like everything's doom and gloom these days, right? I mean, we have, you know, wars breaking out left and right, a bunch of other things kind of, you know, collapsing, maybe even kind of like a monetary war that we got going on with Europe. So, you know, how many years away do you think, like, what are some other like big giant steps that we need to take in order to get to the ability to, you know, potentially be on a Bitcoin standard?
Oh man, that's a hard one to answer, because, you know, there's so many factors involved in that. You know, one major currency blowing up is probably a massive step towards getting more people to pay attention to Bitcoin and getting, using Bitcoin. And you know, obviously, you know, all of the macro events, like, you know, including current ones that are going on right now, are contributing to that, right? It's just more money printing. It's more, you know, it's just more washing of the printed money, so that it doesn't look as bad as it does. But realistically, you know, it all has the same effect at the end of the day. So whether it's a longer drawn out thing or whether there's some bigger macro events that actually force it to happen quicker than we anticipated. But again, of, you know, slowly moving in the wrong direction until all of a sudden they just blow up and that's that. But again, to answer the timeline of when that's going to happen, like, who knows? I've kind of, you know, I've always had this, you know, thing that I've said to people, and I don't know whether I'm kind of just saying it more out of, like, you know, to plant the seed in their head, or whether actually I think it's going to be true. But, you know, I come from Ireland, so we've had the euro introduced in, I think it was like 2000 or 2001 or two or something like that, but it's not very old, 20 years maybe. And so I've always said to friends and family, like, the euro is going to be gone by the end of the decade. There won't be a euro, at least not in its current form, maybe a digital one, but like, it could just be gone completely, because it's already lost, I think, 40-45% of its value in the 20 years that's been around. And so, you know, things like that are going to happen, whether they happen by the end of the decade or whether it's like a bit longer, like, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I'll leave it at that, because it's just too hard to answer. The inevitable.
Yeah, and it seems like, I guess that's kind of you know, almost the doom and gloom, so to speak. So, but how do you think, I guess, we're going to get to a full Bitcoin standard? And I've asked this to a couple other people, and I'll lay out, I guess, two scenarios that I kind of see as a potential. One is, you know, we do the gradually, then suddenly, and kind of, you know, for, I guess, not even better expression, shit hits the fan. You need to have basically your, you know, your food locked up, maybe some weapons, some other things. Like, it's, you know, World War Z out there, so to speak. Like, it's kind of doom and gloom. We have, you know, we hit rock bottom before we can rebuild. The other is, you know, maybe we find some sort of in-between currency where, you know, the dollar fails, or, you know, something like the BRICS currency comes in, or the dollar gets backed by some hard assets. Like, Robert Kennedy, for example, has come in and tried to say that that's what he would like to do, is back the dollar by something like Bitcoin, real estate, gold, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That lasts for maybe a couple decades, but then that inevitably fails because it still requires a trusted party. And, you know, as we've learned over, you know, at least the past decade with the, you know, growth of social media, it seems, is, you know, everybody's starting to wake up that we can't really trust the governments. And then we get to maybe a Bitcoin standard. So I guess out of those two scenarios, what do you think is more likely? I guess, yeah, where is your kind of, I guess, mindset at when it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which one is more likely. I mean, you know, if the US dollar was to fail as the world's reserve currency and something else stepped in, like a BRICS currency or something in its place, you know, maybe that will just prolong the fiat world a little bit longer, but I think the inevitable will still happen. You know, if you in a scenario like that, you know, maybe there's going to be some nation states that are going to say, well, we don't want to use this BRICS currency, right? Like we don't want you guys having the world reserve currency, so maybe we're going to move to Bitcoin. You know, so there's a lot of game theory at play there where, you know, even if another currency does come in, it could be a combination of Bitcoin and other things until eventually those other things fail. I think obviously, you know, all roads lead to Bitcoin. Bitcoin will ultimately be the winner because there will only be one money, and certainly in an open and fair market. If governments run out of money and their currencies fail and they can't print anymore, you know, Bitcoin is going to be the stronger victor there that comes to the forefront. And so I think it's inevitable how it happens. You know, whether there is an intermediary currency, whether Bitcoin kind of just steps in there immediately and takes that role, you know, overnight. I don't know. It's tough, but I think we may start to see, I think we'll start to see Bitcoin, you know, kind of slide into more and more aspects of the macro economy over time, whether it's, you know, nations, you know, trading commodities for Bitcoin, or, you know, whether it's some nations adopting Bitcoin, like El Salvador, or other nations maybe, you know, creating their own currency but being backed to Bitcoin. Like there's probably going to be a combination of a few things that are at least attempted. Whether they last, how long they last, and what effect they have is, you know, is unknown. But again, I'm just like, you know, ultimately confident that all roads lead to Bitcoin, and so I'm not really worried about kind of what happens in the meantime. I'm just setting up for the inevitable future of a Bitcoin world. Whether it happens in my lifetime, I don't know, but as long as I'm fighting for the right cause and I'm heading in the right direction, then I'm happy. I can sleep well at night.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I've been putting you kind of on the spot here, so I appreciate you rolling with the questions. But let's go on to a little bit of a brighter note, right? We're here, we're filming it October 13th. So you know, there's about 3 months or so left in the year. And then, you know, obviously we got 2024, the halving coming up. Like, what are some big things that got you excited about Zapright and Bitcoin in general that we've got kind of coming up on the docket? Anything that, you know, really stands out to you?
Well, I mean, in terms of time in the bear market, just building and refactoring the code base and getting everything, you know, ready to be able to scale on a more solid footing. We launched that in April, and then we spent some time, you know, kind of tidying up a few things and building in a couple of extra features, which we announced at BitBlock Boom at the end of August, which was like our payment links, which are like a, you know, a great complement to the invoicing that we already had in there. And so now I feel with Zapright, with the solid base that we have from our rewrite and our bear market building, and also bringing on obviously folks like Parker and Will joining, is just going to be an amazing accelerator for Zapright. And now, as I mentioned before as well, we're in a position where we have a bit of runway and we can actually take on a few contractors and actually start to build more features. I'm incredibly excited about where we are as a company, and I think we can just start to crank out, you know, some amazing new tools over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months. And that will take us obviously into, as you mentioned, the halving next year. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen then? Like, are we going to be, you know, where do we turn? Like, who knows? Like I said, I'm just incredibly excited for everything that's happening. And regardless of what happens in the Bitcoin market and the price, you know, I don't want to say price is irrelevant because, you know, it plays a big role in terms of, you know, just general overall exposure and people's you know, willingness to be open to be, you know, talking about Bitcoin and experimenting with Bitcoin. It plays a part, but ultimately at the end of the day, we all know it's going to swing up and down, left and right. Well, not left, but like maybe flat for a while. But Realistically, it's just like my super bullishness on everything that's happening in the space in terms of like people building and stuff. It's just, it's incredibly exciting to see. I think, there's going to be a lot of applications, I think, and services and tools that will come to the market over the next 6 to 12 months as we kind of ramp up towards and after the halving. And I think that's what I'm really incredibly excited to see. But just in terms of everything else, like I said, I know there's a ton of people working on amazing stuff, and I'm going to be incredibly excited and bullish to see all that stuff come to market over the next few months.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And John, you've been very generous with your time, so I'm glad we could sit here and talk a bunch about the Bitcoin space and Zapright and what you got going on. So why don't you tell the people where they can find you and what all, like, I guess, where they can follow along with Zapright and yeah, maybe even contact you if they're interested in the product.
Yeah, for sure. First of all, I just want to say thanks so much for having me on. I've been excited to come on. I watched, living in Ireland for the last while, I haven't been here in Austin. So watching your live streams and interviews and stuff around the startup day and everything, it's an incredible service that you've done. So I want to thank you personally for that. In terms of where people can find me, Zapright.com is obviously the website, and app.zapright.com to sign up for the app itself and start a free trial and play around, use the features, give us some feedback on Twitter. And personally, I'm John_Zapright on Twitter. If you want to check Zapright out, just like I said, you just need an email address to sign up. That's it. And if you got any questions or want any onboarding help, just like hit us up. One of us on the team will be more than happy to talk through any questions you have or give you an onboarding demo. So yeah, appreciative of your time. Thank you so much.
Of course, man. Of course. Yeah. Keep up the great work. And I'm definitely following along Zapright, and I'm rooting for you guys. So let me know if there's anything else I could do for you guys. And everybody else, go check out Zapright. At least like give them a follow on Twitter if you're not gonna sign up for the service or anything like that. But if you're a creator, this is something that you should definitely check out. So yeah, John, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.